Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to Millennial Love, a podcast from The Independent on everything to do with love, sexuality, identity and more. This week I spoke to the best-selling author and journalist Candice Braithwaite. We talked about so much in this episode, including Candice's latest book, Sister Sister, a brilliant collection of essays about all the things she wishes she knew when she was growing up, covering everything from family and friendships to money and dating. We spoke about the complexities surrounding interracial relationships, and why Candice always advises black women to go where the love is. For those who don't know, I should mention that Candice was one of the women targeted by a fake trolling account set up by Clemmie Hooper, who used to go by Mother of Daughters on Instagram, but is now no longer on the site due to the fallout from that whole very messy situation, which we do talk about. Enjoy the show! Candice, how are you doing?
I am good, thanks. I had to pause. I think I'm doing that British thing of, yeah, I'm so great, everything's wonderful. It's a bit up and down, like, okay, the world's somewhat open, but we still feel the weight of COVID. You know, it's not going anywhere. But when you're trying to run a business or you're self-employed, it just feels like you have to be back out there, all systems go. So I'm a bit all over the gaff. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you, but I absolutely love my life. So I also don't want the universe listening and being like, okay, love, I'll fix that. No, we're fine. I'm just having to like recenter myself, so to speak.
I mean, you've got a hell of a lot going on, and I can imagine, particularly now with the book release and stuff, it's been quite intense.
Yeah, for Sister Sister, I feel like people are getting like buy one, get one free, because lockdown, we were in the first lockdown when my first book was published. And so now it's very much like, can she come here? Can she come there? Can you do a signing there? And it feels really overwhelming. I don't want to speak negatively about this book. I think it's great. I do wish I'd waited a bit though. There is like,
I was gonna say, it is quick, because I'm Not Your Baby Mother came out, when was it? Was it June 2020?
Yeah, literally. And so
it's,
I'm
very
like,
quick.
Super quick. This wasn't as hard to write, because I'm sure this is a question that will come up later, so I won't go into too much detail. But this book proposal was floating around way before I'm Not Your Baby Mother was even a conception. So it was really easy to write, but I do wish that I'd taken a bit of a break. But there is the pressure of this whole instant gratification society we're living in, and like, you've got to be seen to be working all the time. It's something that once I'm done with the promotion of Sister Sister, it's something I'm gonna actively try and promote for myself. Of course I run a business and I need to make money, but I don't think people need to hear from me as often. You know, I think gaps are good. Gaps are good, you know. Allow people to be hungry. Allow your readers or those that consume your art to be a bit like, oh my God, where is she? You know, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and we don't really talk about that enough, and we're not really conditioned to think that way. Because like you said, it's kind of like, strike while the iron's hot and go as fast as you can and do as much as you can. And that's not really good for any of us. Right, so let's talk about Sister Sister. Tell us what it's about and how it came about. You know, you just mentioned now that that was kind of brewing for a long time.
Yeah, Sister Sister is essentially a collection of essays based on lessons I've learned the hard way, and I'm sharing them hopefully so other people don't have to learn these lessons the hard way. And you know, oh God, I'm not selling it, but let me be frank, Sister Sister is nothing new. There is nothing new about these, like, you know, self-empowerment, hard lessons learned type manuals. The massive difference is none of the ones I came across as a young woman were ever written with a woman that looked like me at the center. And so, oh yeah, cool, you're telling me, you know, oh, just love your hair the way it is. Mine just absolutely does not go into a ponytail, and this is before I had a shaved head, so could we consider that? Okay, you're telling me, you know, oh, be confident in yourself and boys will chase after you. Yeah, but I'm a black girl in a space where boys have been conditioned, even boys that look like me, to hate me. So how do I deal with that? And I absolutely am not the target audience for Sister Sister, because so much has happened and so much has changed. But I would say 18, 19, 20, I would have killed to get my hands on this kind of book, because there were just so many unanswered questions. There were just so many more hurdles for a girl like me, so many more pitfalls that I had not seen explored in a book at all. And funnily enough, Sister Sister got turned down about 10 times.
Really?
Yeah, about 10. We took that idea to various publishing houses, and pre-BLM, they were very much like, there's no market for this. You need to make your writing more universal. Like, oh, yeah, God. Yeah, yeah. Like, is there a way that you can make this about everyone and not just solely the Black British experience? It was very much that kickback. I know.
God, I mean, like, I'm so pleased that it got published, but Christ, it's depressing to hear that it was the language that was used to talk about it in that way. And it's just like, for Black Lives Matter to be the thing that means, oh no, now it's okay.
Yeah.
Now it's in demand. Like,
yeah.
That's the world we live in, isn't it? And you know, the publishing industry is notorious for that, unfortunately. But things are improving, I think, aren't they? Slowly.
Yeah, really slowly. And you know, I'm about to do some kind of festival speaking about and to the publishing world. And now our biggest problem is, it's not that we are lacking for Black writers. Our biggest issue is, and I found this with I'm Not Your Baby Mother during the editing process, the corrections and stuff were coming back, and in the margins it was saying stuff like, well, surely all Africans say this, or I've never seen Black people use these words. And after some investigation, I found out that I'd been given a freelance editor who was in her early 60s, still lived at home with her parents and played the violin. I was like, yeah, this really, I literally picked up the phone. I was like, this is so not going to work. You know, please find me an editor who at least halfway gets what I'm talking about. And that's the problem. We've got so many great Black writing voices now, but the industry is still so like pale, male and stale, or female and stale, because it's a women-led industry. But it's like, okay, we are at risk of diluting Black voices because editors don't know what to do. You want the material, but you don't really know how to craft it. You don't really understand what Black writers are saying. And so now I'm just like, yeah, we've got more than enough Black writers to go around. How are we going to fix this institution from the inside out?
That's yeah, God, that's such a good point. And I think, unfortunately, that's probably true across a lot of industries as well, isn't it? Like even in journalism, I think it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about dating, because you write quite a lot about that in Sister Sister. And I know you're married and you have 2 children.
Yeah.
So what made you want to reflect on that period of your life, and what was that like to look back on that now when it's obviously seems so long ago?
I had to reflect on dating because it is by far the most disruptive period of my life, and the period of my life that made me question myself the most, because everyone around you is seemingly dating or settling down, and you're constantly finding yourself left on the shelf, so to speak. And now so again, we might talk about this later, but let's use Love Island as an example. Year after year after year, we watch the Black girl go in there and be disrespected or rejected or left on the shelf or painted as the angry Black woman. Like, we're literally watching this in real time. And unfortunately, Love Island is a very, very big reflection of the space we live in. And that's just not from a white point of view. This kind of thinking, this negativity surrounding the Black female form also exists within our own community. And again, I had never come across a book that was like, if you're a Black woman, dating's going to be really hard because even the men you give birth to have been positioned to hate you. How are we going to deal with this? Oh, and guess what? The darker your skin is as a Black woman, oh my God, you better double down. And then there's this idea, right, that Black women should just cling on and hope that there's going to be a change or accept a really rubbish partner just so they're able to say that they've got a man who's willing to stay with them like Friday to Sunday, but then he's with another girl Monday to Friday again. Mm. And I was like, absolutely not. And what's so funny is discussing dating, having this conversation. I understand that me being in a really loving hashtag Black love or whatever type relationship is a gift and a curse, because there may be many Black women reading that being like, oh, well, you can talk, you know, it's all rosy for you. But it could also be like, I feel like, this is really weird to say, I feel like there's a large portion of Black men literally just dying for me to be single. Just dying to be like, oh, that didn't work. And that's because you're too confident, you're too comfortable, you're too sassy. And like, because I'm the kind of Black woman that openly says, I can't cook. I'm not the best cleaner. We just got a housekeeper. She means everything to me. Like, I don't go above and beyond for this attention. And being rejected time and again in my teens, as painful as that was, I think that made me get really clear about what I will and won't do for love in my later years, you know?
Why do you think we still have these such rigid ideas of what we think women need to be, not just generally in society, but what women need to be in relationships? Like you said, like men saying they want you to fail because you're too confident or too whatever. Why do you think we're still battling against those stereotypes? And obviously they're much more pertinent as a Black woman. Why do you think we are still fighting against that now?
People are going to hate me, but we're still fighting this because there are people that call themselves women still playing that game. There are women who are willing to overperform. There are women who are willing to like talk utter shit to me on the internet because I admit I can't cook. Oh my God, he's going to leave you. Like, it's literally an internal battle at this point. And it's like, unless we can all get on board with the idea that that way of thinking is dead and that the definition of woman should be defined by the individual, we're going to be here until this world combusts or whatever, because that's what it is, you know, that's where we are. And as annoying and as painful as that is, what I can do is take control of my definition and share my definition, hoping that specifically other Black women come across me and they're like, oh my God, I don't need to be this like stay at home, bake a cake, Barbie type, you know? No, you absolutely don't. And you will feel so much better for it. Do you know how fulfilled I feel when I know I can wake up every day next to my other half and be myself and just be like, I don't have to perform. And I know some Black women married performing. They're still keeping up this performance, and they're the type of woman that in 40 years time they'll be an older lady sat around grandkids at a party and they'll be so miserable because they spent the best years of their life performing for this guy that's either now dead or completely walked away. And I'm just like, if there is a God, if I played my life like that, I would get there and he'd slap me to hell. As far as I'm getting, like, what a waste of time that was.
For the record, I cannot cook either. I am terrible. I've tried and it just does not come naturally to me. I also, baking is even worse because I'm like, with baking, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be a domestic goddess. I'm going to channel all that stuff. Baking's a science, right? You can't be all slapped up. Like, oh, I don't have any flour. I'll just use this. It's a disaster. In the book, you write about how Black women shouldn't feel indebted to the idea of a relationship that is so often withheld from them, and your advice is to go where the love is. So talk to me a bit about what you mean by that, because I think that's really interesting.
I find the blowback, the pushback, the online noise to Black women who decide to date out of their race to be really disgusting. And so few people, so few Black men are willing to analyze the fact that 90% of these Black women, them dating outside of their race was their last choice. This wasn't like they woke up and they're like, I'm totally just, you know, oh, guess what? Black men are just not my preference. The person that I've lived with or been around, not my preference. I'm just going, no, it's very, you know, I've spoken to a lot of black women, and I wouldn't even say 99% of them being in a interracial relationship was their last choice, because it's like, I'm going to turn to a bag of bones waiting for someone who looks like me to show up for me or support me or love me. And so I am absolutely the queen of go where the love is. Like, this idea, this pinnacle of black love, I'm in a really strong black relationship. I even say, in sister, sister, God forbid he dies before me, don't be effing looking for a redo of that. I'm just not invested in breaking myself down enough in that manner just to say, oh, look, you know, black love, I'm with a black guy. I will absolutely go where the love is. And that may be a black guy, but data and my life experience has shown me it's more than likely that it won't be. And I want black women to feel like really safe in that choice.
So, yeah, because you write about interracial relationships in detail, and you say, you know, that they require work like any other relationship, but you point out the importance of recognizing that you're not being, or being able to recognize when you are being fetishized, or as you say, being used as a preference to dissolve someone else's self-hatred. So what do you think are the kind of red flags that might indicate that that is happening?
What are the red flags? Okay, the white guys that just, you know, say you're, because let me be extra, say you're 18 months in and you never meet their family, complete red flag. Complete red flag. Or say you don't meet their close friends, or they won't call you girlfriend in front of said friends or family. Complete red flag. I don't know how some people would go about this, and I don't even know what you can reference on this podcast, but if they are like literally obsessed with ebony porn, get the frig out of there. Like, run for the hills. It's like these things become very, very obvious. Another thing is like, if they want to parade you, like get dolled up, go out, all of that, but say when the makeup's off and you're out of the dress, they cannot or do not want to communicate about things like BLM, or maybe you feel like, you know, you've had a bad day at the office because of microaggressions. If they're not able to have those discussions, absolute red flags. And I can't honestly sit here and say I know what an interracial relationship is without those red flags, because all of mine contained a version of or all of the above. So I can't even sit here and offer the flip side that's like, but you may find someone who quote unquote has done the work and reads the books and knows what. I don't know that. That's not to say it doesn't exist, but I do want black women to recognize those red flags and run for the hills.
Because you write about this breakup that you went through in an article for Bureau about a man who told you, his language was very interesting, that he saw the world in black and white, and he explained that there were no black people living in the village where he came from. I mean, it sounds like something from like a Jane Austen novel, like a really, really racist Jane Austen novel. And then he just didn't think that your relationship would work in the long term. So can I ask how old you were when that happened, and how you reflect on that looking back now? Because I can imagine that.
I think I was about 22, and he was older than me, not that much older, but old. Now, again, upon reflection, older than I would have liked if I had a little bit more sense in my head. And he was great with language. He literally was like, I see the world in black and white and you see it in color, and that's the problem. I see way more barriers to us having this relationship. Interestingly enough, he is now the father to a mixed race child. And you know, from, because people talk, it's been hard for everyone involved in that situation, because now he's forced to deal with some things and confront some things, you know, which, again, I always find, you know, the world's been really good to me. I've had some tough situations, but I seemingly feel like I'm in a bulletproof Bentley and all of this stuff ends up in my rear view. And I just watch people's lives like combust into flames, and I'm like, oh my God, sucks for you. And then I drive on into the sunset, and I feel like that about that relationship. And yet it was just really sad because we weren't just dating, and he, red flag, he had met my family, I hadn't met his, all of that stuff, you know. But that was a massive wake-up call for me. It was like, so how much longer are you going to play this game? Jokes on me, I played it for a little while longer, because the ex after that was absolutely the worst of all exes. That ex was like, who was Carrie's worst ex? It's still big in my opinion. That ex.
Burger, was... Jack Burger.
Oh my, yes. So that ex was then Burger.
So misogynist.
Yeah, it took a long time, but it would. Again, when you're surrounded by media and people that constantly reflect to you that you're not lovable, you are going to end up in hurtful situations, to be fair.
You recall how you kind of spent years chasing men who only loved themselves. And I think that's a really common experience for straight female listeners of this show, particularly those in their 20s, because it is that idea of, you know, trying to find someone who's going to validate your insecurities, but they also kind of exacerbate them at the same time. So how did that kind of level of narcissism manifest in your relationships with these men, and how did you come to recognizing it? Or was it only in retrospect now that you're able to recognize it?
Definitely.
I think it's really hard to see it at the time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely only in retrospect, definitely. So the Jack Burger was a lot older than me, far too old for me. Had kids that could walk and talk and use the toilet and all of that. And now I'm just like, you were just such a puppet in that moment, a puppet to their ego and their position in the world. But I do take some of the blame. You know why? I had been told by many women around me that the goal was just secure a rich, wealthy guy who's going to look after you and you don't have to do much. Like, that's the goal. You just want to be... And looking at their lives, they went about that even to the point where they left their morals and self-respect and values on the floor in order to perform this quote unquote easier life. So for any straight woman listening of any race who finds themselves in that scenario, I just want to say this. Nothing feels, again, I don't know if swearing's allowed, but nothing feels...
Yeah, you can swear.
And nothing feels as fucking good as making your own money. It's the sickest feeling in the world. It's such a sick feeling to, like, maybe you're on a date with someone and they're just pissing you off and you can control every element of your life. Because let's be honest, a lot of younger women, we end up with these really narcissistic men because we've been sold the idea of someone has to save you and he's going to do the building and you can, there's a 50s housewife element in there somewhere. It's like, I want to be with this older, rich, a guy who's going to protect me and uplift me. Oh, cut the crap. It's just such a waste of time, because the reality is the longer you stay with them, the more of yourself you lose, and it just gets harder to get that back. And so after the end of that relationship, I want to say I took a while off, but that's a lie, because then my husband came into my life, and that's a very different scenario. And that was a hard one to get my head around, because he's very obviously black, and He was by no means rich. We've actually had to build together, but that's been really, really helpful. And I just look back again on those times, cringing, but also like, I'm so thankful for those lessons, because what am I now? 33? You can't play me now. Like, in it, if I had to go back, number one, I wouldn't go back into the dating field. Absolutely not. So let's just wrap that up. But if that, let's just pretend I had to go, like, you couldn't, I'm just not fazed, you know? I look back on the stupid, painful shoes and the dresses that were just really tight and constrict. And I'm just like, oh, God.
It's like a metaphor that those tight dresses, it's like a metaphor for what you're doing when you're dating, you're trying to date, impress a man who you know, you feel insecure around. It's like you're literally squashing yourself to impress him. It's so bad.
And I
it's
remember so with like my burger ex, I hadn't yet started my career, but there were things that I was really, so like at some course during our relationship, I was training for London Marathon, and he never once like wanted to hear about training. And I remember like the day I went to race, he just wouldn't get up. He didn't show up to cheer. he didn't. And like, I came back to where he was living with the meadow, and he was like, that's nice. Yeah. Yeah. It was just, it was just very like, you know, anything I felt was an achievement was cut short. Like, it's not a conversation. Right. That's nice. Oh, guess who I met today? And guess what I'm doing next? And da, da, da. And I thought, wow. Mm. Wow. You know, long term, Candice, will you even stop trying to achieve things? Because in the space in which you live, they're not celebrated.
Mm.
Whereas now, sometimes I don't want to celebrate things, and my other half is so fucking like, come on, let's go out. Why have you not drunk? Why are there four bottles of champagne? You should have drunk three already. And I'm just like, because I'm just not feeling great about this. Like,
hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How you met your husband?
Twitter. He stalked me on Twitter. I used stalk, but he followed me on Twitter. We've done the maths for 6 years, so he watched a lot of these relationships in real time, and then I tweeted when that last relationship ended. Then he started like DMing me, and he was like, oh my gosh, I constantly miss your messages, let's move this to WhatsApp. I'm the least technological person, so I send him a link to my WhatsApp. And then he phones me, and I was like, hello, like, how the hell did you get my number? He's like, duh, it's WhatsApp, like, I can just scroll to the top and see your number. Literally, the rest is history. Like, we started dating, like, say, a week later. He came to the flat share I was in, and he literally never left. And our relationship completely goes against all of the things you shouldn't do. Totally slept together the first night, totally had fun. And it's just like, and having a relationship like that with him, just that makes me laugh even harder, because I'm like, everything we're sold is bullshit. It's like,
yeah, it is. It completely is. And the sleeping with someone on the first date as well is such a thing we need to debunk, because I've literally done that with every single guy I've ever dated as well. I mean, I'm in a relationship now, but I'm just like, it's such bullshit that we're not allowed to do that. And I think that's so shrouded in the shame we attach to female sexuality.
And that's
as well,
so rubbish. Like, imagine dating someone for 2 months or 3 months or 6 months. Okay, and this is outside of those who, for whatever reason, want to wait. Okay, that I'm not judging that. But outside of that, what, just because, like, the world says don't do that, or they try and make women feel icky? No, absolutely try before you buy. I have heard some horror stories, like, oh god.
Yeah, I think you have to test. You need to know how sexually compatible you are with someone. You absolutely have to, because you don't know until you try it. You just don't know. I want to go back to Love Island, because you brought it up earlier. Yeah. And obviously it's on at the moment. So the show, like you said, has been, you know, criticized for years for the treatment of black women on the show. I think it took 4 seasons for there to even be a black woman on the show. You know, I guess I'm curious to know, what do you think Love Island should do in order to try and rectify that, or try and improve the representation? What do you think is the answer? A lot of people are saying, you know, they need to cast more men that are attracted to black women, because there's elements of fetishization, I think, isn't there, when the men are like, oh, I like women with dark features. Yeah. Like, they just use that very ambiguous term.
I know a few of the black women who've been on Love Island, and they are so lovely and so gracious. But I think black women should just, for as long as this show's still on the air, they should just stop going on there. It's just, nothing ever changes. And I just think there has to come a time when we as Black women say enough is enough. And I've seen a lot of people talking about the American version, where there is a Black woman on there and she's like, she's been in so many connections or whatever you call it, and like she's really loved and adored. And I'm like, until we can get some of that US energy, we absolutely should not be doing this, you know.
I think there is a growing like resentment towards the show, and it's definitely not as popular as it was a few years ago. I think there can be value in the show sometimes, and I've written about that, like there are a few things, but the thing is, the value in it is, I think, from watching men gaslight women and then women being able to be like, oh, that's happened to me, or that is happening to me. But at the same time, obviously it's having to happen to someone in order for you to learn about it. But I do think there is value in that. But that's not what the show is intentionally doing, obviously. It's sort of like an incidental byproduct. But yeah, I think as the years have gone on, it's just, we need a different show. And actually, I really like Too Hot to Handle. I don't know if you've seen that.
Is that on Netflix? I've not watched it.
It's on Netflix, So it's quite fun.
See what I mean? There are different variations. I know I started watching something on Netflix. Was it The Circle or something? Like, there are different ways to do these reality shows that, God, dare I say, may make people more intelligent, may make them think, or make them be like, you know, why is it that contestants on The Circle change their profiles to white girls, or, you know, or a taller guy? Like, what do we need to analyze within our society? I just feel like something like Love Island, it's just not giving very much. And even the think pieces that come from it, we then have to depend on the population to be smart. We have to depend, you know, on the population to want to learn something else. And we can very, and we all do it. We literally follow people who are like us. So all our social media is an echo chamber. We're like, oh my God, you're smart and you're open-minded and you want to learn and this is great. And you put your phone down and you go out the door and you're in the 1%, babe. Everyone else is just like, yeah, don't like her tits, mate. Like, there's a lot of that happening also. And so, yeah, I think we, and by we, I mean those who feel as though there's nothing more to learn from shows like Love Island, need to step away.
I want to talk to you about I Am Not Your Baby Mother, obviously your phenomenally successful debut book that came out last year. So I'm presuming you wrote the book in 2019?
Yeah.
Is it around then?
Yes.
So it's kind of, it's a call to action for the UK to kind of see and make space for Black mothers in the same way that it does for white mothers. So I wonder, a few years on now from writing that book and post-BLM, where do you think we are at with that now? And have you noticed changes in dialogue, in social media, in the people you talk to?
I've definitely noticed changes in social media. Just because BLM was the loudest on social media, right? So all these businesses and corporations that quote unquote would say use mummy influencers, everyone's just had to ground to a halt and start again. And all those really uncomfortable positions I was finding myself in my early mummy blogging days, where I'm the only Black woman on set, or I realize I'm being paid hundreds while the white women around me are getting thousands. Like, all of that just cannot exist now because you will be exposed so heavily. So seemingly on social media, even though it's performative, there seems to be a change. But considering the success of I'm Not Your Baby Mother, I have yet to even smell another book about Black British motherhood. That's a problem because lots of people don't know this, but if you go to the British Library today and say, I want a book about Black British motherhood, the only book they can give you is I'm Not Your Baby Mother. There is absolutely nothing else in the entirety of the British Library about the experience of being a Black mum.
That is unreal.
My firstborn, I had to import all my books from the US. And yes, there are similarities. African-American women are more likely to die in childbirth also. There are really stark differences. And so also for me to be kind of sitting here with this pressure of being the sole voice in that regard, that's gross. That's really gross. It's like, how can only my story matter? I don't know.
What do you make of the term mummy blogger and of being within that world and being really the only Black voice in that world still now? What do you make of that?
I definitely will say, if it's not been made clear, I resign from that role. I'm absolutely, I'm like, ew, no. And what do I make of it? I won't lie. When I approached the gates of mummy blogging, I put my business hat on and I saw a gap in the market. I was like, oh my God, you all look the same, talk the same, wear the same clothes. Let's spice it up a bit. And let's see what happens when a black woman forcefully comes into the playing field. Didn't really go down well. There's been lots of ups and downs, you know. And so mummy blogging currently, I would say it's a world that I don't know and I don't understand, because so many of the women I would say I was forced to play fair with maybe 5 years ago, I feel like I no longer have to. And so, and there've been so many of them who have not been kind or gracious. And so it's felt really nice to be able to turn my back on that situation and say, I don't even fuck with that space anymore. I will say that, like, my other friends who are influencers of some sort, they always keep me up to date on, oh my God, this new black family's coming up. And I'm like, okay, that's wicked. That's wicked. And what I've noticed from these new black families or black women who would call themselves mummy bloggers is, post BLM, they don't have to put up with the bullshit I did. It's like, you know you're going to go on to a diverse set. You know no one's going to want to not pay you fairly just in case there's an expose. So it's really different. I do feel like the black OG of that situation, and it's not even something that I'm like, oh yeah, you know, pay homage. I'm just like, let's not talk about that. It was helpful and I feel like I've done some really great work, but it's not like the thing I want on my fucking gravestone, like mummy blogger of the year 2018, like also, like, I don't think there was anything that really showed parenting to be the true democracy that it is, right, as COVID did. Like, we don't give a shit how you're feeding your kid, bro. We don't care. Are they warm? Are they safe? Are we staying safe? Like, COVID just brought everything back down to the floor. And it's like, dude, not one version of parenting is better than the other. COVID really, in my opinion, thankfully killed the idea of cliques. And like batches of people who appear all over your feed and make you feel bad and give you FOMO. Like, no one cares. And I will end by saying I'm really grateful to this stepping stone that mummy blogging could provide. But it's not for me anymore.
You know, it's been mired in controversy as well with everything that happened with Clemmie Hooper and that whole.
There's that. And just, whilst I don't, it's not even that I don't reference her often, I barely reference her at all. We must understand that her behavior is, again, that's a reflection of 90%. That's a reflection of that coming out of your front door and putting your phone down type of vibe. Because I think we can really get a good sense about people when they think they're not being seen. As I said, and I'm not your baby mother, all that really matters is the stuff that you do when you think no one's watching, because that's a true reflection of self, right? And what happened there was a true reflection of self and a true reflection of what I had to deal with in that situation or in that scenario. And that was tough. It's still something that I don't really let meditate on my mind, because it's like, I feel so far beyond that situation and whatever they had going on. But it's just like, it's a really good example for what people have to deal with in these industries, because I'm sure mummy blogging is not the only space that has these really vile, competitive, two-faced elements to them. And so it really is about being aware of that. If you think, even for a second, for anyone listening, that you want to use social media to like build a brand or help boost your career, like, this is one of the pitfalls that awaits. And I think okay, so this is what's important. What she did is not important. What's important is how I manage myself in that moment, because that's all anyone remembers. It's like, oh my God, Candice absolutely said nothing. She went dead silent and she came back and just built her brand tenfold. That, for me, that was a massive teaching moment. I was like, okay, babe, shit is gonna happen. Shit is, it's just gonna happen. How do you respond, if at all? Because sometimes I always say this, one of my favorite sayings is silence can't be misquoted. Sometimes, and it goes against everything we've been taught to do on social media, sometimes shutting the fuck up is so good. Just shut up, just shut up, just shut up. So no one can misquote or twist or, you know, bend.
Yeah. I completely agree, because people are just waiting for you to fuck up, aren't they, in that situation? They are just waiting for you to screw up so that they can have something to talk about at the pub.
Exactly. And I felt like so many people in that situation were waiting to be able to say, see, that's why she spoke about her that way. Or there's that angry black woman that was referenced. That, you know, there it is, there it is. And it's like, ha, 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 not today, not today.
Yeah.
And that's really unfair. Of course I was angry. Of course I get angry. Of course I'm hurt. The reality is, as a black woman who has, quote unquote, a public profile, I can only ever show one side of myself. And I went to the Brit school, so I'm very fucking good at it, to be fair. Like, I got an A-star drama BTEC. You cannot out-act me. But it does mean that I spend a lot of time in my home dealing with the emotional consequences of this job that I've chosen.
It is time for our Lessons in Love segment. So, I sound like a game show host. I'd love to host a game show, actually. So, this is the part of the show where I ask every guest to share something that they've learned from their previous relationship experiences. Okay. So, Candice, what is your lesson in love for us today?
Absolutely don't hate me. I think this is the most important lesson that I was told this by some people as well. And I was like, oh, that's so, God, I know, I can just feel the Twitter fingers.
I'm like, I don't even want to,
I can feel people's Twitter fingers, but I'm going to say it. For those in heterosexual relationships, find a man that loves you more than you love them, please.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Find a man who loves you more than you. Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, why? Why?
When women love, we go all in to the point of emptying ourselves out. Like, we've got nothing left. We've seen it happen time and time again. The relationships around me that have gone the distance and that I just look at and I think, Jesus, that's so good. Some of the men even confidently say, oh God, I love her way more. Like, I am just all about her. And that, there is something about womanhood, like a lot of women around me always used to say, like, keep something back for yourself. Now, that is not to say you treat this person like rubbish. No, love them, but get with a guy who's always gonna go the extra mile. It's just so beautiful. And I think women specifically get triggered when they hear that, because you remember what it was like when you love someone more than they loved you. You remember how shit that was, how you did all that shit for his birthday and he forgot yours, how you planned this surprise thing and he never went out of the way for you. You remember all of that. And so this is like my, what's that word? This is like my love reparations. Get with a guy who loves you more than you love him.
I love that. I actually think that's really good advice.
I love my other half so much, but...
yeah.
I know he loves me a bit more.
it reestablishes the kind of power dynamics a little bit, though, doesn't
it?
Yeah. It's a good way to, like, because, balance the books.
Yeah, there are going to be times as a woman, maybe you choose to have kids or whatever, there are going to be times where the power is just not in your hands, right? Maybe because of the physical or maternity leave or anything. And so it's always good to look at your bank account of love and see that he's always putting more in than you.
That's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you are a new listener to this show, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or anywhere else. You can comment and leave us a rating too, so that more people can find us. Also, our book, Millennial Love, based on the podcast, is out now with Fourth Estate, and you can buy that at any good bookshop. Keep up with everything to do with the show on Instagram. Just search Millennial Love. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.